Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for Colorado Hockey Now, podcaster here at Mile High Sports. Coming to you on Sunday, February 23rd. Today, we're talking about Four Nations face-off. We're talking about, from this Canadian, a wonderful ending to a wonderful and epic tournament and an incredible championship game where Team Canada came out on top 3-2 in overtime, thanks to the game-winning goal from none other than Connor McDavid on a beauty of a setup for Mitch Marner after a rim around the boards from Cale Makar. Those are the three guys that came together in OT. Canada wins gold a year out from the 2026 Winter Olympics. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about something that I mentioned heading into the final game that we now know has kind of held true. So let's start with Team USA. Unbelievable talent. And I'm going to get into some of the parts of their team that I am beyond impressed with. But I'm going to start with the forwards. I'm going to start with two guys. I'm going to start with Brady and Matthew Tkachuk, who in the end, both came out of the tournament hurt. Both came out of the tournament without a gold medal. Entertaining as all hell. The best of the best types of talents. But I think this tournament's going to kind of teach them a little bit of a lesson, because there are two things about that, about those guys, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I think they got, in the end, a losing effort because of it. Number one, they talked a lot. If you have been following international hockey for a long time, you've seen in the past the Americans beat Canada in the round robin. And I look back to 2010 specifically, only for Canada to come back and win the game that matters. But the part that is kind of most surprising is NHL players, especially, you know, looking at Matthew Tkachuk, who has won the Stanley Cup, they live by the mindset of the job is not finished. And it almost felt like they took on the mindset after the round robin game last weekend on Saturday, after they beat Canada 3-1, that the job was finished. And that kind of threw me off. You know, we heard Brad Marchand. If you didn't hear his comments, Brad Marchand came out after the game, the championship game, and talked about how two incredible talents, but they ran their mouths and, you know, they did it too early. And that was ultimately something that took me by surprise. I think that's something they're both going to learn from, because even in best-on-best hockey, you need to have that mindset, especially in best-on-best hockey, because it is a one-game elimination. The better team usually wins 4 out of 7. Anybody can ride a hot goalie or a hot hand in a one-game elimination and beat you. The other thing that stuck out to me about the Tkachuks, I talked about this last week, they blew their load way too early. They went too hard too quickly, and it took 2 or 3 games for them to already both be hurting. You know, Matthew Tkachuk, in the end, his tournament pretty much ended, you know, after halfway through the second game against Canada. He played Sweden and played damn well. Sorry, Finland and played damn well, scored 2 goals. Comes out strong to start the game against Canada. Obviously fights in the beginning. USA takes a lead 2-1. At that point, late in the third period, he tells John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan that he's done. He can't play anymore. Misses the entire game against Sweden. Comes back in the championship game. Plays 6 minutes and 47 seconds. Matthew Tkachuk pretty much blew his load by the end of the first period of that second game of the tournament. Brady Tkachuk, not quite as severe an injury and not quite as, as much of an absence. And in fact, he scored in the gold medal game against Canada. Well, the championship game. I don't know whether to call it a winning gold, winning a title, winning a tournament, winning bragging rights. Brady Tkachuk scored in that game too and had a damn good game. But just like Matthew, it kind of felt like he got a little too excited after the game against Canada last weekend. But with that, like, I need to say, this forward group, Austin Matthews, you know, he had that tough ending at the end. But you can also say Jack Hughes should have been the one to come down and cover McDavid after Matthews had to move to Marner. But he had that, you know, tough look at the end where he's the one that's covering Marner, leaving McDavid wide open. But he looked really good in that entire game. And if it wasn't for Jordan Binnington and two like ridiculous saves, Austin Matthews is probably the one celebrating the game-winning goal, not Connor McDavid. So that was an incredible ending. God, I thought overtime was just spectacular. There were 10 total shots in an overtime that lasted just over 8 minutes. The shots were 6-4 for the Americans. In the third period, as in comparison, 20-minute third period, the shots were 8-4. 20-minute second period, the shots were 9-8. 8-minute overtime, the shots were 6-4. These teams were both going for it. Nobody wanted a long overtime, knowing very well that a lot of these guys had to play a day and a half later. And most of them lost a day and a half later. So going back to that, you know, Austin Matthews had a great game. I thought he was wonderful. I thought Brady Tkachuk obviously was great. Jack Eichel, I didn't love his game in that finale, but he was decent at parts of the tournament. There were some players on this roster, like, you know, Chris Kreider playing for Kyle Connor. You're not going to see that in the Olympics. I thought Vincent Trocheck kind of looked a little bit out of place, even as a depth guy. Brock Nelson was just meh. But the biggest one for me, and I talked about this the other day from a negative standpoint, is Jack Hughes. Of all the teams with star talent, I don't think any team is more worried coming out of that break than watching their guy go up against best on best, like Jack Hughes and New Jersey Devils fans. Granted, I say that now knowing very well that I'm recording this on Sunday. Saturday, Jack Hughes played pretty damn well against the Dallas Stars. The Devils lost, but Hughes looked great. But he didn't in this tournament. In best-on-best competition, he looked out of place. In best-on-best competition, Chris Kreider, Vincent Trocheck probably shouldn't be there. JT Miller struggled quite a bit. Very inconsistent. But they have a lot of talent. I thought Dylan Larkin was spectacular, and deservedly so. He got an upgrade in minutes, played 20 minutes and 21 seconds, just 26 seconds behind Austin Matthews. I thought Matt Boldy was spectacular. 22 minutes and 42 seconds, most among the forwards on this team. The only one that came close was Jake Guentzel at 22-22. On defense, I am going to say it now. They had it now, but even more so, next year, nobody's going to have a better defensive core than this team. Quinn Hughes was missing. Charlie McAvoy was missing. So those are two guys that are, and obviously McAvoy started the tournament and then got injured. But those are two guys that you know for sure are going to be part of the top six. Now let's move on from there. Zach Werenski played 23 minutes and 7 seconds, looked incredible, led the tournament in points. Let me say that again. Zach Werenski led the Four Nations Faceoff in points with 6 points in 4 games. So there's a third defenseman. Brock Faber, 28 minutes and 50 seconds in the championship game, most in the game, most in the tournament. He played the most for Team USA. There's a fourth part of your top six. Then you have Jacob Slavin. Need I say more? Jacob Slavin, this was his coming out party, and I think that that's so unfair to him because he is such an underrated player and probably should have a Norris Trophy right by now. But I literally spent the day or two of practice talking to both Marty Netches and Jack Drury off the record and just asking them about Jacob Slavin. Like, is this dude as good as he freaking looks? And they were like, yeah, this is just who he is. He's unbelievable. And both of them, you know, agreed and said that he doesn't get enough respect. So you got McAvoy, you got Quinn Hughes, you got Zach Werenski, you got Brock Faber, you got Jacob Slavin. Holy shit. Any one of those guys, those top five guys, would probably be the second best defenseman on Team Canada behind Cale Makar. Team Canada just won a championship with Thomas Hartley, Drew Doughty, Colton Parayko, and Travis Sanheim as your bottom four because of losses of Pietrangelo and Theodore. And Josh Morrissey, I should say. Those are five unbelievable defensemen. Then you have Noah Hanifin, who looked consistent, looked okay, 19 minutes. Jake Sanderson, who I think to me is the sixth best defenseman and should be there ahead of Hanifin in the starting lineup next year. He played 1944. Obviously, he had the other goal. Brady Tkachuk had the first goal. Those are the six or seven top defensemen with Hanifin. That leaves out one name, and that's Adam Fox. Adam Fox struggled like crazy. I did not love his game in this tournament. Will he still make the Olympic roster? Probably, because he's Adam Fox. But this is how good of a lineup Team USA has on the blue line. That if Adam Fox doesn't get it figured out, you can sit him and feel comfortable about the seven guys ahead of him, not just six. So between that, between the offensive firepower, if the Tkachuks, and obviously next year it's the Olympics, you're not going to have the same type of physicality as you do now, because if you do, Brady Tkachuk might get called for 10 minor penalties in the first game alone. So he's going to learn really quickly that you got to change the way you play at international rules. But between that, the Tkachuks, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, Dylan Larkin, this team is loaded. And then, of course, Connor Hellebuck in goal. Moving on to Team Canada. So much fun. I said it again. Kale McCarr and Devon Toews is your top pair. The bottom four defensemen for Team Canada. Listen to how flawed this sounds. I just said it a minute ago, and I mean this with all due respect to all the players being named, but this is a best-on-best championship game. Travis Sanheim, Colton Pareko, Drew Doughty, and Thomas Harley, who like 5 days earlier was about to board a flight to Cabo and then got called in because Mackenzie Weegar and whoever the hell else they had planned, Brandon Montour, were probably already on vacation. Obviously, having Shea Theodore, Alex Pietrangelo, and Josh Morrissey would change the look of this defense. You have guys like Evan Bouchard, Mackenzie Weegar, Noah Dobson, who didn't make the team. So Canada's got defensemen. But the way that this roster thinned out quickly, especially with that Morrison illness, you got to be impressed by what they did. Of course, they have the ultimate ace of spades in Kale McCarr. You also have Devon Toews, who right there riding shotgun with him, played 27-27 in the championship game, right behind Kale McCarr's 28-17. So they were the ones that pretty much carried the show. I thought Colton Pareko looked a hell of a lot better than I expected. I thought Thomas Harley fit like a glove from the moment he was called up. He played 21:56. In fact, third highest defenseman ice minutes, ice time and minutes behind McCarr and Toews was Thomas Harley, followed by Drew Doughty at 20:54, followed by the pairing of Sanheim and Pareko. At forward, going through each guy on the list, Sam Bennett scored an incredible goal, a big goal. He also had the fight. He played 14 minutes. He made his presence felt. He was there. Sam Reinhart had an assist. He made his presence felt. He was there the whole time. He played 20 minutes. Mitch Marner, 18 minutes, plus two primary assists. The beautiful goal from Sam Bennett was beautiful because Marner set it up and the way he set it up. The game-winning goal from Connor McDavid happened because Marner had his head up the entire time, went skate to stick off the rim around by Kale McCarr. And if you watch Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday, you heard Mitch Marner talk about how that's something he practices all the time. Keeping your head up, looking at the play, and being able to take a puck around the rim that gets rimmed around the boards off your skate to your stick to make a play without turning away from the play. And that's exactly what he did. McCarr rims it around the boards. Marner put his skate there. Kept his eyes on Connor McDavid, who was wide open opening up in the slot, kept his eyes on the play, was able to smoothly bounce that puck skate to stick to McDavid to the back of the net for the championship. Mitch Marner, it's funny because like he didn't look great all tournament, but he scored the game-winning goal against Sweden in overtime. He set up the game-winning goal in overtime to Connor McDavid, set up the play to Sam Bennett. He had a lot of huge moments. And that's all you can ask. You know, when you're playing in best-on-best and you have pretty much 12 forwards who should all be first-liners on their team, if you have a bad game, that's okay because there's 11 other guys that are going to play better than you. And the reality is, because of how much more the ice time is going to be spread out, let's look at Nathan MacKinnon, for example. This game went 68 minutes deep. He only played 20:31. If this was an Avalanche game, Sidney Crosby played 19 minutes, by the way. If this was an Avalanche game, Nathan MacKinnon is playing 28, 29 minutes by the time you get to the 68-minute mark. Moving on to Braden Point. Braden Point, I thought he was a great fit with Connor McDavid because of his speed. I loved that he was able to join that line late in the series, or in the faceoff in the tournament. Seth Jarvis is the next forward on the list. I'm still curious about the decision to bring him. Great vibes guy, but he's very young, and it seemed like they wanted to reward a player who's probably going to be on future teams, but I'm really curious about where he will be in a year from now. Nathan MacKinnon, enough said, MVP, 4 goals in 4 games, opening goal. I loved that Canada scored the first goal in all 4 of their games, and 2 times it came from Nathan MacKinnon, and 2 times it came from Connor McDavid. Brandon Hagel, good God, made a fan out of me. 15 minutes and 23 seconds in the championship game. He was a plus one, but the footprint, the handprint, the stamp he put on this tournament with the fight, the quotes, the comments, the tenacious play. This is a star. It is so unbelievably unfair that the Tampa Bay Lightning were able to lock him up for only $6.5 million pretty much for life. He's got 62 points in 55 games. Let me say that again. Brandon Hagel, who joined the Tampa Bay Lightning with a career high of 37 points and only had 7 points in 22 games in that regular season in 2022. And then when he played in the playoffs against the Avalanche in the Cup Final that year, 6 points in 23 games in the playoffs. That player has turned into a guy who followed it up in 2023 with 64 points in 81 games. Last year in 2024, 75 points in 82 games. This year in 2025, 62 points in 55 games. His ice time has shot up over 2 minutes per game. He's playing 21 minutes per night. He's about to break his career high in shots on goal at the, you know, before the 60-game mark. He's 4 goals away from his career high in goals. 13 assists away from his career high in assists, 13 points away from his career high in points, and there's still 27 games left in the season for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Unreal talent. And the type of game he plays, he fits that team well, and I loved what he brought to Team Canada. Will he be there in a year? Depends on how he plays. If this guy turns back into a 40-point player, probably not, but that's not going to happen. I think Brendan Hagel will be there in the Olympics. Mark Stone was a little bit of a curious... had a little bit of a strange tournament where it's kind of hard to gauge just how well he played, because I think the lack of speed for him to keep up with Team Canada made it hard for him to really make as much an impact as I expected him to. And again, when I'm kind of breaking down these players in the Four Nations Faceoff, that's aside from the fact that they're top line players on their team. Mark Stone's well over a point per game this year. He's an unbelievable player, the captain of the Vegas Golden Knights. However, there was a little bit of something there missing with the speed element. And the same goes for Brad Marchand for different reasons. Marchand is 36. He's almost 37 years old. But God, you got to love having that guy in the locker room. You got to love having that guy on the team. Will he be there next year? Maybe, maybe not. But he'd be 37 when the tournament starts next year. So actually, he'll be 37 in like 3 months. So we'll see what Team Canada decides with Brad Marchand. Anthony Cirelli, I kind of go back and forth on him. Of the 3 Tampa Bay guys, I thought he was the least effective, but he's also a defensive juggernaut and a stalwart, and that's what he does. So with John Cooper coaching and with the way that, you know, he wants this team to play and having that shutdown type of player, wouldn't surprise me to see Cirelli there again. He did win 6 of 8 faceoffs. He played over 14 minutes. But I'm really curious how that goes. And then you got Sidney Crosby, Drew Doughty, who I think will both be there next year. Drew Doughty, I think, is reaching the end of his career, but I think he's got another great year in him. And then, of course, Connor McDavid, enough said with him. Now, I do want to touch on goaltending. So, about 2 years and 1 month ago, Jordan Binnington had his shit show game at Ball Arena where he was trying to fight. I forget who he was trying to fight. January 28, 2023. I'm pulling up this article that I wrote because I need to remember what happened that night. January 28th, 2023. This is after they played each other at in the playoffs in 2022 in the Nazem Kadri fiasco and water bottle gate and all of that. Jordan Binnington, who did he try to fight that night? Gosh. I just remember 18,000 people booing Binnington. He confronted, he went after Curtis McDermott after confronting Logan O'Connor. Okay, it's starting to come back to me. Moral of the story, Jordan Binnington made an ass of himself. The reason why I'm bringing up that game is because January 28, 2023, when that game ended, and I remember this game vividly, it was a 1 p.m. start. The most downloaded podcast episode ever for this show, which used to have a different name with JJ Jerez as my co-host, the most downloaded episode by far was that night where we did a post-gamer and talked about Jordan Binnington making an ass of himself. We all know the history between Binnington and the Avs. Again, the 2022 postseason, Nazem Kadri and Callie Rosen go barreling into the crease. Jordan Binnington gets hurt after stealing. This was in game three in St. Louis, after stealing game two in Denver. You got to remember, in 2022, the only team to not go down 2-0 in their series against the Colorado Avalanche was the St. Louis Blues in the second round, and it was because of Jordan Binnington in game two. Kadri and Rosen go barreling into the crease. He gets hurt. He's done. In comes Ville Husso. The rest is history. Water bottle gate. He tried to throw a bottle at Nazem Kadri. He said some dumb shit. We all hate him here. I got to get that out of the way because now putting on the Team Canada blinders. Holy crap. I've never met a more fascinating goalie in my life. He's so inconsistent. You kind of get a little bit of that clenchy feel that you get kind of like the last, I don't know, 3 months of Alexander Georgiev with the Avs, where you're like, is this guy going to make a save? I don't know if he's going to make a save. And every time there's a golden opportunity against him, you get worried. Jordan Binnington is very much that. But he, somewhere along the way, he got the gene for clutch games, and he's done it time and time again. Is he clutch enough to win game 52, 53, 54 of a regular season and make sure the Blues are always in the playoffs? No, he's inconsistent as all hell. But you put him in a winner-take-all game 7 against the Boston Bruins at TD Garden, and he wipes them out. You put him in a winner-take-all championship game against USA, also at TD Garden, and he stonewalls Austin Matthews, among others, in overtime and throughout the a regulation of that game. You put him in a winner-take-all game against the Dallas Stars in the second round, he won that one in 2019 as well. This guy's got the clutch gene, and he's a big-game player. The only problem is he doesn't play well enough to get himself to the big game often enough. Fascinating goalie, fascinating as can be. I think he, based off this performance, will be on Team Canada next year, but it sure as shit better be with two other goalies not named Aiden Hill or Sam Montembeau. And I'm looking at Logan Thompson, I'm looking at Mackenzie Blackwood, and I'm looking at Darcy Kuemper. Specifically, most notably, Thompson and Blackwood, I think those guys should have been there this year. Blackwood, a little bit less because he was traded to the Avs 5 days after the rosters were due. But there was no reason why Logan Thompson was snubbed in favor of Sam Montembeau of all guys. But I think Binnington will be there next year, and I'm so excited to see it. But going over these two rosters, I did this little exercise for a reason. Team USA is stacked. Team USA has what it takes to win. Matt Boldy is going to be a year better, a year older. Brock Faber is going to be a year better, a year older. The Tkachuks are going to learn from this, and they played spectacular in this tournament. They're going to look even better in upcoming best-on-best tournaments. Dylan Larkin deserves his flowers, deserves a top six role. He sure as shit better be playing big minutes. It's criminal that the Red Wings won't let this goddamn kid get some playoff games under his belt again. He deserves it. Austin Matthews, Jake Guentzel, I didn't talk a lot about him. He was awesome. Let's see if Jack Hughes can figure it out. You got Quinn Hughes coming on defense. I went through the whole blue line. I didn't even mention Luke Hughes, who he's also going to be a future option. Team USA is a stacked crew. You know, and we're talking in 3 years from now when they're back to the next World Cup of Hockey in 2028, there's an opportunity for Ryan Leonard to be a part of that. There's an opportunity for Will Smith to be a part of that. These are big name players that were drafted high that are overly hyped for a reason. Team USA's coming. So you look at Canada, you look at USA, the difference in this tournament was the top end talent, the McKinnons, the McCars, the McDavids, the Crosbys. It was the clutch gene of Jordan Binnington. It was finding a way to come away with the win, which Team Canada does often, and Team USA has struggled with in my lifetime at least. But I am so excited to see where this rivalry goes. Winter Olympics, is it going to be the same type of hockey as this? No, absolutely not. Anybody fights, you're getting thrown out of the game, full stop. But between that and between the upcoming World Cup of Hockey in 2028, I couldn't be happier for where international hockey is going. If it was criminal that the Red Wings have not allowed Dylan Larkin to play in the playoffs, it is fucking criminal that the NHL has gone 11 years since the Winter Olympics and 9 years since the last World Cup of Hockey to give us best on best. That was spectacular. The amount of people that have nothing to do with hockey that have been talking about this tournament, my goodness. Knocked it out of the park. Grand slam by the NHL. Wonderful tournament. The players showed up. They gave us an incredible product. Great storylines. Great hockey all around. Can't wait to see where it goes from here at the international stage. Also can't wait to see where it goes from here in the NHL with the trade deadline now just 12 days away. But let's put an end to the show here. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. And we out you.